I Blog Reader, Take 2. Posted on Monday, October 23, 2023. It's definitely not done yet, but hey, progress is progress. And I did promise I'd let you know how it was going. So, on hosting publicish HTT servers, there was a situation a little while ago where I had to expose one of my machines to the internet in order to keep tuning it. And I couldn't predict what my own IP address would be, so whitelisting wasn't a realistic option. A couple hours in, I noticed that the internet hasn't gotten any more orderly since the last time I had to run tail-var-varlogaccess.log. What I saw was a bunch of external services trying to hook their tendrils into various exploit attack surfaces, none of which I happened to ever expose. So, as a result, there's a new section in Catwalk that goes, here is a code block. A code block is written in Python. At a high level, this code block creates a blacklist of IP addresses that are not allowed to access certain routes on a web server. First, it checks if a file called blacklist text exists. If it does, it reads the contents of the file and adds them to a set called IP blacklist. If the file doesn't exist, it initializes IP blacklist as an empty set. Next, there are several root handlers defined using the app.root decorator. These roots correspond to specific URLs that the web server can receive requests for. The added to blacklist function is associated with these roots. It retrieves the IP address of the requesting client from the remote adder variable in the requests environment. It then opens blacklist. Text in a mode which allows reading and appending to the file. The IP address is written to the file, followed by a new line character. The IP address is also added to the IP blacklist set. Finally, OR for HTTP error response is returned to deny access to the client. Lastly, there is a before request function called block by IP. It retrieves the IP address of the requesting client and checks if it is in the IP blacklist set. If it is, a 403 HTTPP error response is returned to deny access to the client. Overall, this code block sets up a mechanism to block certain IP addresses from accessing specific routes on a web server. You can see some of the exploits that I directly witnessed in logs. Near as I can tell, GeoServer, Actuator and Redline are all industrial firmware hosting frameworks. That gauge call is something exposed by old cable modems, and Bowform is some sort of exploitable fiber optic modem link and post. The idea behind the above block is that there is now the blacklist text file, which I'll be regularly publishing in my GitHub as I push more commits. Either import or initialize that file on FlaskGuardUp. If we get a hit on any of the known exploit endpoints, we immediately blacklist the source IP. This definitely isn't an approach that I'd recommend to anyone doing anything approaching professional output, but it works for my particular use case. If you want something like it, but better, take a look at the Flask, IPN repo, link in post. On reading things wrong sometimes, Taurus TTS doesn't always pronounce things correctly. Link in post. For instance, TTS is tits instead of TTS, ChatGPT is chat, or ChatChit instead of ChatGPT. It also, surprise, doesn't pronounce emojis at all, and it embarrasses me by mispronouncing various Toronto-related words in my own voiceover. I think I could eventually solve some of this by training it further, and I'm going to try that eventually. But I'm also going to do this, link in post. Sometimes, the correct solution is a thing that's nebulous or risky enough that you want some stopgap in the short term. And when that happens, it's helpful to name it in a way that reminds you that it is a stopgap. Hence, horrifyinghacks.py. As of this writing, it contains, here is a code block. This code block is written in Python and is a utility for replacing certain tokens in a string with their corresponding pronunciation. The code begins by importing the remodule, which provides regular expression matching operations. Next, there is a dictionary named letter pronunciations, which maps each letter of the alphabet to its corresponding pronunciation. After that, there is a function named acronym which takes an acronym as input and returns the pronunciation of each letter in the acronym. It does this by iterating over each letter in the input acronym, looking it up in the letter pronunciations dictionary, and appending the corresponding pronunciation to a list. It then joins all the pronunciations in the list together with spaces and returns the resulting string. Following that, there is a dictionary named mispronounced tokens which maps certain tokens to their correct pronunciations. Then, there is a set named acronyms which contains a collection of acronyms. After that, there is a dictionary named Unicode which maps certain Unicode characters to their corresponding pronunciation. Next, there is a regular expression object named re which is compiled using the recompile function. This regular expression is used to match patterns in a string that correspond to either acronyms, mispronounced tokens, or specific Unicode characters. Following that, there is a function named replace, which is used as a replacement function for the resum function. This function takes a match object as input and checks if the matched token is an acronym, a mispronounced token, or a Unicode character. Depending on the type of token, it returns the corresponding pronunciation from the respective dictionary. Finally, there's a function named apply, which takes a string as input and uses the re-sub function to substitute all occurrences of patterns matched by the re-regular expression with their corresponding pronunciation. It then returns the resulting string. You can see that there are components dealing with acronyms, specific mispronounced tokens, and Unicode characters that I happen to like using in my block. The top level external interface is just apply, which takes a string and returns a horrifyingly hacked string that should be better pronounced at the other end. On trying things out, other than basic pronunciation errors, Tortoise sometimes just straight up fails to produce audio. I'll get a sentence that starts well and then cuts off suddenly before all of its content is spoken. Sometimes I'll even get back an audio file of rustling or spooky whooshing noises instead of anything resembling human speech. These are the failure modes I imagined could be avoided by doing a transcription pass and checking the output of that against the initial input of Tortoise. That's still something I want to try, and I'm well positioned to do it. On the flip side, there's already a few places where the recording has pointed to bugs in the original article. Either something that I initially take for a pronunciation error that I then realize is actually a spelling error in the original, or something that ends up sounding awful enough when spoken that I have to go back and rewrite the textual These aren't benefits I was expecting, but I'm thankful for them in any case. I've put together a small Emacs interface for myself to compile these audio files effectively and stitch them together. There isn't a full round trip happening yet, and I won't document that until I have at least a few of my blog posts up as podcasts. The goal at this point is to get a full round trip happening, even if it's initially with some human input, and then let it loose on my archive. There's a few more finicky procedural details I need to work through, but overall I'm within a few hours of work of having it add a podcast linked alongside each blog post. You know how this ends by now. As always, I'll let you know how it goes.